And welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show. It's Monday, it's the 13th of August 2018. It's 11 o'clock and we have a great show ahead of you this morning. I have on the show with me a couple of special guests from Gardening for the Mind. We have Alison and Caroline. Good morning, Alison. Good morning, Caroline. Say hello.
Good morning. Hello.
It's great to have you both on the show this morning.
Thank you.
And in about 25 minutes, we will find out more about the services that Alison and Caroline offer. On today's show, we're going to be talking about mental health, and we'll be discussing mental health with Caroline and Alison as we go through the show. But I'm going to chat this morning before the interview about the stigma of mental health. And then if we have time at the end of the show, I'm going to quick piece about probiotics, as most people don't know what they are or what they do. So we'll be talking about probiotics towards the end of the show. So a quick disclaimer before we kick the show off this morning. The purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters that we cover and to help educate, inform you and enlighten you in ways that you can improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I am not engaged in providing medical advice and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which often can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking to your local pharmacist. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research. And the Health Matters Radio Show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience and my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. So, mental health. In today's society, there is a stigma. I think we can be very honest about that. Some people do embrace it. Most people don't, unfortunately. And it's very difficult for people that don't have mental health problems to appreciate those that do. It's very difficult for people with mental health problems to actually be very open about it and discuss their issues because of the stigma. So what is mental health? Well, mental health is just like physical health. Everybody has it and we need to take care of it. So when we're in good mental health, it means that we can think, we can feel, we can react in ways that that we need and we want to live our life day to day. But when we have periods of poor mental health, it means that our thinking, our feeling and our reacting can become quite difficult, and often it can become quite impossible to cope with. So when you have mental health issues, as opposed to physical illness, they don't often have manifestable symptoms. So people often suffer in silence. And in the UK, it's estimated that about one in four people suffer with mental health issues in any given year. And these can range from common things like depression and anxiety to rarer problems like schizophrenia and bipolar. And these things can be very upsetting, they can be confusing, they can be frightening. And for those that suffer with these issues, they may feel that they're to blame, they may feel that they're weak, they may feel that they're losing their mind. And this is the important thing about breaking down the stigma and talking about mental health. And often these negative thoughts are reinforced by TV and film and the media. They don't really understand mental health issues themselves. And that often increases that isolation that that person might feel. A lot of people that suffer with mental health won't get help until they have an episode or they have a breakdown. Because at that point, then they feel like their issues are serious enough to qualify for help. But if you are struggling with mental health issues and mental illness, then it's never too late to seek advice and never too early to seek advice equally. So let's talk about some of the common mental health issues that we face today. So the first one is depression. Depression is a feeling of low mood that lasts for a long time and it affects your everyday life. This can make you feel hopeless. It can make you feel guilty, worthless, unmotivated, exhausted. It can put you into despair. It can affect your physical health, your self-esteem. It can affect your sleep, your appetite, and lots of other parts of your life. In the mildest form, depression doesn't stop you leading a normal life, but it can make things harder to do, and it can make life seem less worthwhile. As depression becomes more severe, it can make you feel suicidal, and obviously then becomes a life-threatening situation. Anxiety is when we're worried or we're tense or we're afraid, and actually normal occasional anxiety is part of the normal human experience. But if those feelings of anxiety are very strong or they last for a long time, they can become very overwhelming. And if you suffer with anxiety, you may be diagnosed with a particular anxiety disorder. So this might be for example, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. It could be panic disorder. It could be social anxiety. It could be generalized anxiety disorder, a thing called GAD. But it's actually possible to suffer with severe anxiety without having a specific diagnosis. Eating problems fall under the mental health spectrum. So eating problems are not just about food. They can be about difficult things and painful feelings, which you might be finding hard to face or perhaps resolve. And people think that eating disorders are associated with being overweight or underweight. And actually, that's quite a myth. Anyone, regardless of their age, their gender or their weight, can be affected by eating disorders. The common eating disorders include things like anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder. And there's a thing called OSFED, which is other specified feeding or eating disorder. But again, you may have an eating disorder without a specific diagnosis. OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, falls under the mental health spectrum. So this is a type of anxiety disorder, but this term is often misused in daily conversation. So you might hear people talk about being a bit OCD, perhaps, because they like things neat and tidy. But the reality of it is this disorder, OCD, is much more complex and serious than just liking things to be a bit more neat and tidy. So OCD has two parts. We have the obsessions. So these are the unwelcome thoughts, images, urges, worries, doubts that repeatedly appear in the mind. And then we have the compulsions. So these are the repetitive activities that people that suffer with OCD feel that they need to do to reduce the anxiety caused by those obsessions. Bipolar was once called manic depression, and this mainly affects your mood. With the diagnosis of bipolar, you're likely to have times when you experience manic episodes, so feeling high, or hypomanic episodes. You may have depressive episodes where you feel really low, and everywhere in between. And some people that suffer with bipolar, sometimes they have psychotic symptoms as well. Schizophrenia, the definition of that has changed a lot over the years. And some people question whether it's really a distinct condition or actually a few different conditions that tend to overlap each other. So people that suffer with schizophrenia may suffer with psychosis. They may suffer with disorganized thinking and speech. They may feel disconnected from their feelings. They may have difficulty concentrating. They may want to avoid people. They may have a lack of interest in things, and they may not want to look after themselves. But because psychiatric experts disagree about what schizophrenia actually is, some people actually argue that this term shouldn't be used at all. Others think that the name of the condition shouldn't really matter, and that they should just focus on helping those people manage their symptoms and help them with their individual needs. So the spectrum of mental illness and mental health is obviously quite vast. Those are just a couple or a few examples that I thought I'd mention this morning. And I'm sure you've heard of some of those and maybe some you haven't heard of. So what can we do to help? So this is geared towards people who don't have mental health issues and also people that do have mental health issues as well. It's about helping each other. It's about communicating, it's about talking about the issues, and it's about together breaking down the stigma. We all have a responsibility to do that, to break the stigma. So one of the ways that we can help, for those of you that don't suffer with mental health issues, is be conscious of your language. So stop using those mental health conditions as adjectives. And what I mean by that, and you hear examples, people say, oh, I'm just so OCD, I just have to clean my bedroom. Or they say, oh, the weather's been so bipolar lately, I don't know what it's doing. Or they might say, oh, last night's episode of whatever TV program, that was just so depressing. That language actually undermines and belittles the conditions that people suffer with, things like bipolar and OCD and being depressed. It's very, very stigmatizing. And by using that language, by using those adjectives in just day-to-day language, we actually add to those stereotypes that these disorders carry. Depression is more than being just a little bit sad. OCD is much more complex than being just a tidy person. And anxiety is more than just being a little bit stressed. It also makes the conditions sound less serious than they really are. Many of the conditions associated with mental health are very complex, and they do present themselves in different ways. And when you talk about mental illness in such almost throwaway language, you're breaking down the illnesses to their simplest forms, which is often very wrong. If you use that sort of language, it can discourage people that do suffer from being open about their illness, and it might actually stop them seeking treatment. If they hear about their condition being treated a bit like a joke and just in throwaway language, they might actually feel invalidated and be less open to talk about their issues. And the people with these illnesses, they are people. They are not their diagnosis. And joking about their condition, you know, we don't joke about other physical illnesses. We don't joke about cancer, for example. So we should stop throwing away these simple phrases with regards to mental illness and making it almost a joke. And it also spreads misinformation. So mental illness is a fairly misunderstood topic itself. So we need to not use mental illnesses in our daily conversation, because we can often use them inaccurately. We need to encourage equality between physical and mental illness. We don't make jokes about diabetes or heart disease or cancer. So, you know, if we're using that sort of language in our day-to-day life, we need to have that equality between someone who's physically ill and someone who's mentally ill, because it can be as serious. We should show compassion for those with mental illness. We should help them to empower themselves and be empowered, and help them to choose a life that's empowered. And when they take ownership of their life, if you suffer from mental illness, when you take ownership of your life and your story, and you refuse to allow others to dictate how you're viewed, then it can really empower you to move forwards. Don't harbour self-stigma. So fight stigma by not having stigma. Don't hide away from the world in shame. Be a productive member of society. You know, volunteer, get out there, create friendships, be purpose-driven, and show others that even those that suffer with mental health issues can lead a very meaningful life while they are battling their mental illness. And also, for those of you that do suffer with mental illness, talk about it, because it can be incredibly isolating. If you've got mental health conditions, talk about it, be open. Share your story with other people, because that can be very cathartic for yourself, and it all can also help other people who are suffering as well to realise that they are not alone. So that's what our collective voice sounds like. It sounds like bravery, strength and persistence. Those are the qualities we need to face mental illness and to fight stigma. No matter how you contribute to the mental health movement, you can make a difference by simply knowing that mental illness is not anyone's fault, no matter what societal stigma says. You can make a difference, but it takes conscious effort. So if you do suffer with mental illness, there are some organisations that you can talk to. You can talk to the Samaritans, and you can call them free on 116 123. You can talk to Mind in England and Wales. You can talk to the Scottish Association for Mental Health if you're in Scotland. And if you're in Northern Ireland, you can talk to Aware. And those numbers you'll find on the internet. But I will post them on the show's Facebook page a bit later on today as well. If you live outside the UK, and I am conscious that this show does reach countries, not just in Europe, but in other continents as well, and you do suffer with those issues, then please have a look on the internet and do search for the most appropriate service in your country. So quite a deep subject. I really did, you know, it really was just touching the tip of the iceberg. But hopefully, with those suggestions, it will make people think more about mental illness in our society today. Bring it out of the shadows, bring it out of the cupboard, so we can have a proper discussion about it to support those that really do suffer with those problems, and often they suffer in silence. So that leads us nicely on to the next part of our show. After the break, we've got our guest interview with Caroline and with Alison. But before that, I'm going to play you a song. This is an incredibly personal song to me. It's taken me a lot of courage, actually, to choose to play this song for you this morning. For those of you that know me, you'll know my story. And if you listen to the lyrics, you'll know why this is a very, very personal song to me. This is The Great Song by Linkin Park, and it's called One More Light.
Should have stayed, were the signs I ignored. Can I help you not to hurt anymore? We saw brilliance when the world was asleep. Things that we can have but can't keep. If they say, who cares if one more light goes out in the sky of a million stars? It flickers, flickers. Who cares when someone's time runs out? If a moment is all we are, quicker, quicker. Who cares if one more light goes out? Well, I do. The reminders pull the floor from your feet. In the kitchen, one more chair.
That was Linkin Park and One More Light. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. It's Monday, the 13th of August, 2018. And if you'd like to make contact with the show, you can drop me a line via the show's Twitter feed, which is at Health Radio Show. If you'd like a shout out, if you've got any announcements or just would like to say hello, then you're more than happy to drop me a line. You can also find the show's Facebook page, which is Health Matters Radio Show. And you can also contact me direct via email via my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk if you would like to contact me directly. So we're going to go on today to our special guest interview with Alison Marsden and Caroline Aldiss from Gardening for the Mind. Good morning, Caroline. Good morning, Alison. How are you this morning?
Morning.
Hello. Good morning. Very well, thank you.
Fantastic. It's great to have you on the show this morning, and I'm looking forward to finding out more about what you do. And I'm intrigued about the connection between mental health and gardening. So we're going to explore that in more detail, and obviously it fits in very well with the first part of the show. So, Caroline, we'll start with you. Can you give me just a bit of background, give listeners a bit of background as to your journey that's taken you to where you are now, that experience that you've had?
All right. Well, I've been a therapist now for 16 years, and I got made redundant, so I changed career. I started off as a reflexologist, and I found that when clients were coming to see me, I was helping them feel relaxed and calm. In fact, my nickname where I work at a school is Calming Caroline. I was also being counselling them with all their issues, and that led me into becoming really interested in the mind, fascinated with how the mind works. And so then I went into hypnotherapy, but I did NLP first, which is neuro-linguistic programming, which is all about taking responsibility. And we did a whole day of being in and out of trance, which led me into hypnotherapy.
Okay.
And personally, I got into mindfulness with illness myself, and I was suffering from shingles, which was a really sort of stressful condition. And so I did an 8-week course, which really helped me manage that pain. And the thing with mindfulness is it's about being in the present moment. It's about being aware, and it really helped me manage that pain. So a lot of when we suffer emotionally and physically, when we have emotional pain, you can't see that. So when you have something like shingles, it's very much, or a broken leg, you can see it. But mental health is, we often keep it very secret. So that led me on to becoming a mindfulness facilitator 4 years ago. And that was really life-changing. So now I integrate that into my daily life. And I met Alison while we were on a network course.
Okay.
And we had a light bulb moment.
We did.
So we'll go on to Alison now.
So Alison, good morning. Let's talk about your background and how you complement Caroline.
It sounds one of those rather weird journeys, but actually it all made sense to me at the time. I also changed career. I worked in IT project management for a long time. And linking into the mental health bits you were talking about earlier on, that was at a time when it was seen to be quite normal for everybody who reached a senior position to, quote, go off on their stress break and then come back a few months later. Of course, nothing had changed in the working environment, and so it all happened again. And there was very little awareness at the time of that may be to do with mental health. We just called it workplace stress. So I got out of that business. Like many people, I was a keen gardener at home all my adult life. I'd already done some gardening qualifications because I like to learn and do stuff properly rather than trial and error. And eventually I decided I would help other people to become more confident gardeners. So for 10 years, I've been a gardening advisor, tutor, doing some talks and teaching over in West Kent. And I came across what's officially called social and therapeutic horticulture, a few years ago, I did some outreach teaching for Kent Adult Education Services, and they asked me to go and run a few sessions for West Kent Mind, who we've already mentioned. They have a Sevenoaks Centre, which has a beautiful garden out the back, which had already been set up by the clients and the staff and the volunteers, and a very active gardening group. And going to, that was my first introduction to gardening and mental health and well-being. And it all sort of chimed in with comments I'd had from clients and students about the garden being a sanctuary or getting us away from the stresses of the work by going to their allotment at the weekend. So I began to look more into this and discover that it was a thing and you can be trained and people run projects. So I became qualified also in social and therapeutic horticulture, which I talk about as gardening for well-being. It's just a little bit more approachable. And then I met Caroline at a networking event, and she talked about mindfulness and I talked about gardening for well-being, and yeah, there was one of those moments when you suddenly realise you're really saying the same thing.
There is a huge connection there, isn't there?
Yeah, to do with being outside and nature and connected us with nature. And gardening can be a little bit stressy if you don't like mowing the lawn, then I suppose that could be a stressy activity, in which case I would say to you, get rid of the lawn.
Absolutely.
Get the garden. Get the garden you want, and then you'll be happy in it. But things like some of the activities are very slow, weeding and planting and sowing. You can use them as a mindful activity, and that's what we worked out. I on one of Caroline's mindfulness
meditation, and after my meditation class, we went out on a mindful walk, and I was talking about looking and stopping and pausing and breathing and just noticing the trees and the leaves, the colour, and just when I was talking about the leaves shedding from the tree, Alison just said, That was just such a light bulb moment.
Yes, I talk about that. When I talk about gardening for well-being, we were using a lot of the same analogies.
Yeah.
And the sowing and the planting and the nurturing. And suddenly we just looked at each other and thought, you know what? There's a real blend here that would enhance both sides.
Yeah.
So, and we came up with gardening for the mind.
Yeah, there is a real synergy there, isn't there?
There is when you think about it. I think initially it seems a bit odd.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
There is a real synergy, particularly with the outdoor mindfulness that Caroline was specialising in.
Yeah.
And what we discovered on our first course that just happened very naturally, the group of women that we were with when we were outside and we were doing the mindful movement exercises, which is very gentle movement. So even if you've got a bit of arthritis, you can do these wonderfully gentle movements.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went specifically into doing movements for the hands and really strengthening their hands. And they really found that useful, so that when you're gardening, you're just taking moments to pause, really appreciate what is around you, the smells, the sounds, and really just tuning in, taking a moment to think about their health and to appreciate and just being, stepping out of the doing and just being in that moment. And when we walk, we can just, it only takes a moment to be mindful, and you can integrate that into your daily life. So each time you take that step, you can just breathe and just feel that peace with each step you take. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, so the mindful movement for gardeners came just all, as Caroline said, that happened spontaneously in the first workshop we ran, where thinking about loosening your back or your shoulders, and suddenly I thought, you know, when you get up from sort of kneeling or weeding or you move from one place to another, just take that moment to do that mindful movement and run through your body, and it will really help with, you know, backache the following day. And just so mindful movement for gardeners, just that was a real, suddenly just appeared as an idea.
One of those light bulb moments.
It was. The whole thing has been, really.
And it is interesting because, you know, people do relate gardening to de-stressing, but I think they do it very subconsciously. And I think if you're consciously conscious, that is almost, let's call it therapy.
Yeah.
You know, therapy, you know, we spoke about mental illness. We've got a stigma in our society about mental illness, and there is a stigma about therapy, and quite unjustly so. But when you go out gardening, if you're consciously conscious about what you're doing and the benefits to the mind, I think you can get more from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's interesting now is that gardening is one of what they call the green care therapies, which is becoming, there's sort of several report, lot, quite a lot of reports being issued, including one in 2016, I think, by Natural England, mm-hmm. the government, looking at the value of green spaces and exercise outside, and but also gardening actually can be used as a practical therapy. It's a whole scale from people gardening at home and having a calm moment outdoors away from the family and the dog and the washing up or their work, right through to very organised projects from people trained and qualified in social and therapeutic horticulture, helping organisations and people who have many of the much more severe diagnosed mental health support needs that Neil, you were talking about earlier on. So there are projects where people go for a few hours, and they actually the gardening activities are selected and tailored to help those people with social interaction, self-esteem, being in touch with nature, feeling self-worth. And gardening is simply, apart from being a great hobby, it can be, you can pick those activities quite deliberately to provide real benefits to people. And it's a whole scale of the same thing, from you know, me weeding at home to a project for somebody who may be living with very serious mental health support needs. And sometimes it doesn't really seem like therapy. It's a moving seamlessly from, as I say, the gardening at home through a community project into actually planning interventions for people.
And I think that's a really interesting point as well, because when we talk about therapy, we think we go into a room with a man, we sit on the couch, we lay on the couch, and he regresses us back to our childhood. You know,
He fixes it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not about that, is it, at all?
It's not about fixing. In fact, that's what I love about mindfulness with the courses that I run, is I just facilitate. So I'm on the same level, and mindfulness is a journey for everybody. And we create with our workshops just a supportive space for people just to explore their own emotions. And it's a coming together. It's meeting of minds, if you like.
Yeah.
It's both physically and mentally. And so it's a marriage of the two, really, isn't it?
It is. And it's helping people who may have very good mental health to support it.
Mm.
You don't have to have mental health difficulties to want to look after your mental health. If you have good health,
I agree completely.
Same as physical health, you know, you look after yourself.
Yeah.
And daily mindfulness and daily mindful activity is a really important way of maintaining good mental health or improving it.
Mm.
And I suppose in the workshops we're showing people how gardening can become that everyday mindful activity. You don't have to set aside a different time or a different thing. It's part of your daily life, assuming that you like gardening.
Of course.
And who doesn't?
And I think for people that need to draw that connection between physical well-being and mental well-being, we exercise, we go down the gym, we go out for walks, we go jogging, often as a preventative measure to stop us becoming physically incapable or sick as we get older. And the mind is no different. You can't not exercise mindfulness.
No.
But then as you get older, you know, those issues may creep in. So what I'm trying to say is, in the same way as you would go down the gym to prevent yourself getting perhaps physically unfit or overweight, then you do need to exercise the mind as well, and not wait until there's a problem.
No. Absolutely. And also, when you're doing gardening, you're outdoors, you're connecting with nature, and it's about that connection. And once you have that sort of those moments of awareness, that is the first step to change.
Yeah.
And so we also do a little bit of meditation, where they just are able just to meditate in a quiet space and reflect on their intention for change. And that's not a goal for the future, but it's just about being in the here and now. And whether it's they just want to feel peaceful or just calm, or there might be a significant change that they're going through.
Excellent, yeah, absolutely. So let's talk more about the workshops in detail, because obviously you two have come together. There's a great synergy between what you both do, not just in terms of the service that you offer individually, but there's obviously a chemistry in terms of personality. You can tell that you two work well together. Let's talk more about the workshops and the sorts of people that may be specifically you're looking for that might be interested in coming onto the workshops, and maybe just a little bit of detail about how they run and where they will be running as well.
Okay. Well, they really are a unique workshop. They're blending the well-being benefits of gardening that we've already discussed and mindfulness, so it's the coming together of those two things. We're integrating the physical activity of gardening with the times of being mindful, where they're just pressing the pause button and mm-hmm. just allowing those moments to be, embracing whatever comes up for them. So often when we pause and reflect, we find emotions bubble up to the surface. Mm. But because they're in a safe, supportive space, our groups are about sharing. So we do like a sharing time space where people can just express their feelings.
So there's a mixture then of a meditation. We start out with a meditation and sowing the seeds of intent. That's what Caroline leads that. Yeah. And we use the one we've run, discussion, a little bit of background on how gardening can support mental health. Sometimes, as we've said before, there's an intuitive part to that, but also explaining to people how they can choose activities and make it work for them depending on how they're feeling. And then we do some mindful movement, and we actually do some gardening. I mean, tabletop, it's not out there digging my allotment. We're not taking people out to do that. But usually planting up, getting your hands into the compost, feeling the compost, planting, potting up, choosing plants. Sometimes they're scented or different colours. So actually going home with some sort of planter that people have potted up themselves, taking it away, and then wrapping that up with another sort of meditation to close at the end.
Yeah, and it is a lot of it. Our first workshop, we focused on self-care. Mm-hmm. So it's about integrating, sowing the seeds of self-care. And I give exercises for people just to reflect and really just come up with their own self-care plan to take away with them that's easy to integrate into their daily life. So it really is an invitation to learn how to switch off and to be mindful and meditate those moments in that day.
So people can take that away and then continue doing that at home. I mean, each of the workshops we run has a slightly different focus. So it's not a one-off. People can come to more than one.
Yeah.
And we focus the activity and the mindful thoughts on seasonal topics. So as you come into autumn, then we'll talk more. There's more about I think Caroline mentioned earlier on the trees dropping leaves, then you shed the negative thoughts and the baggage you're carrying with you. So the analogies tie up and we work around then a seasonal gardening topic, seasonal gardening activity for people again to take home.
And I just want to mention, because you talked about sort of anxiety and stress, and with mindfulness you can really kind of be rooted to the present moment, which really helps. You're not thinking about fearful moments in the future. You're not reflecting on the past. When you're in the present moment, you're just in the here and now. Mm. And you actually have part of your brain, which you're training the brain. It's a mindfulness muscle, as you were saying earlier, not just the physical, but it. Just 10 minutes of meditation a day makes a huge difference. And mindfulness is a proven method. It's recognised by NICE guidelines as a proven method for depression, anxiety and stress, and to manage chronic pain.
And actually it's even better if that 10 minutes is out in a green environment.
Yeah.
Again, there was some research done, I think, in the early 90s, with 10 minutes outside of sort of calm reflection, and they did some testing with people sitting in a green environment just being mildly distracted by listening to the birds and looking at the trees, and they compared then people's measured stress and anxiety levels to a sort of control group who I think had been sitting in a car park for the same 10 minute period, and I don't surprise anybody to know that the people in the green environment actually were a lot de-stress an awful lot more than the folks sitting in the car park. The two together, you know, how good is that?
And actually hugging a tree is really great. I hug trees.
I don't. As a gardener, I don't do a great deal of tree hugging, but I love the texture of the bark. You know, feeling and touching the texture of tree bark is a so. Perhaps that counts as tree hugging.
Very tactile. So your workshops. You've got one coming up in September.
We have.
And then another one in October.
Yes, Thursday, the September the 6th, and that is in Blackham Village Hall, in the wilds of Blackham.
Well, it's just outside Tunbridge Wells, to be fair. Yeah. It's not that wild,
but it is beautiful.
And there's an outdoor space. If it's not raining, we'll be outside.
It's the old village hall.
And the one in October?
The one in October is planned. We might be doing that in Chiddingstone, but that's to be confirmed.
The dates are to be confirmed, but we are both based around Tunbridge Wells, so we're talking about West Kent locations. The other thing that we're interested in, obviously as well as the public workshops, are sort of doing a mobile. So we'll come to you. So a family or a group of friends, a community group or a school or a social group, you know, half a dozen people, we can come. If you provide a venue and have preferably some tea, then we'll come along and bring everything you need for the mindfulness and the gardening activity.
We're also both going to be promoting our Gardening for the Mind workshops at a Thrive weekend in Southborough, and that's on the 29th and 30th of September. And that's just outside Southborough.
Yeah, it's called the Discovery Health Discovery Weekend. That we're not running it, but we will be there
along with a lot of other
health and well-being folks.
Brilliant, fantastic. So, if listeners want to make contact with you, if you've resonated with individuals that are listening to the show, how can they make contact with you both? What's your website address? What's the best way to make contact with you?
Well, for Gardening for the Mind, we have a brand new Facebook page, which is Gardening for Mind, Body, Soul.
Okay.
All one word with no dots and hyphens in it. So Gardening for Mind, Body, Soul on Facebook. We each have websites as well.
Yes, and my business is called The Right Foot Forward, and you can contact me on cw@carolinewright.co.uk or my website is therightfootforward.co.uk.
And that's right with a W.
It is.
And my website is, my business is called Gardening by Design, and that's my advising, tutoring and wellbeing for gardening website.
So that's gardeningbydesign.co.uk.
Again, it's all one word, so gardeningbydesign, all run together, .co.uk, and all my contact details of phone, mobile,
fantastic,
Twitter are on there. I would love to hear from people.
Excellent. And I'll put your details up on the show's Facebook page a bit later too. But Caroline, Alison, it's been fantastic to have you on the show this morning. This is the 33rd Health Matters radio show, and I meet people in all different fields and walks of life under the wellness umbrella and the health umbrella. And I must admit, you're very unique in what you do. And I can see a huge value in the services that you offer. So I wish you the very best for the future. I think you'll be very successful.
Thank you very much indeed.
It's been great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, so after the break, we are going to have a chat about probiotics. But before then, we're going to go into our next song. It's a great song. It's a classic from the 80s. It's Duran Duran and The Reflex. Duran Duran and the Reflex. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva, and my special guests on this morning, Caroline and Alison. So before we wrap the show up in about 5 minutes or so, I just want to have a quick word about probiotics, because there is some miseducation out there about what probiotics are and the best places that you can get to them. So probiotics are essentially live bacteria. They're in most milk products, because, and you know, things like yogurt, because that's how yogurt's made, with bacteria. But you can also buy probiotic supplementation, and we're going to touch on both. Okay, so in your gut you have trillions of bacteria, and some are good and some are bad. It's quite important to keep the balance between the good and the bad healthy, and it's estimated that you should have about 85% good to about 15% bad, and that way the bad is kept in check by the good. But what happens sometimes is we get sick, or we have a bad diet, and then our balance goes out of kilter. And sometimes when our good bacteria lose a foothold in our gut, the bad bacteria can grab hold, and they can populate, and they can change that balance, which can make us quite sick. If you take antibiotics, it often decimates the bad bacteria, but it's unfortunately decimates the good bacteria too. And then when you recover, it's kind of whoever can get first to the gut will populate the gut. And sometimes that's not always the good guys. So it's really important that, in my opinion, to keep your supply, your reserves, your good bacterial soldiers really healthy, and to make sure that they outnumber the bad guys. Now, there are two types of bacteria. There are actually many types, but they fall under two main categories. The first one is called Lactobacillus, and the most common one there is Lactobacillus acidophilus. And Lactobacillus you'll often find in things like yogurts and fermented food, and actually different strains, and there are many different strains within the Lactobacillus family. They can help with things like diarrhea and gut issues. Then you have Bifidobacterium. Now, Bifidobacterium can be found in some dairy products, and Bifidobacterium can be quite good at relieving symptoms of IBS. And then you have a yeast called Saccharomyces boulardii, and again, that can help with things like digestive issues and diarrhea. So these are some of the benefits that we have from having a healthy balance in our gut of good to bad bacteria. Probiotics, so dosing up with probiotics, they can actually help prevent and treat diarrhea. If you are a frequent traveller, and often when you go to other countries where perhaps we're not used to the bacterial strains of those countries, shall we say, or maybe hygiene is not quite as much as, you know, as good as we're used to in this country, there is a strain called Lactobacillus rhamnosus, which is really effective at combating traveler's diarrhea. So if you travel to these countries and you are susceptible to getting diarrhea for the first few days, perhaps from drinking the water or eating certain foods, then Lactobacillus rhamnosus is actually really good at combating traveler's diarrhea. There is some evidence as well where probiotics have improved some mental health conditions. There is some really good research papers out there that says that good gut health has a massive connection to our mood and our mental health. And there's some really interesting animal and human studies that have found that probiotic supplements can improve some mental health disorders, which include things like depression, anxiety and stress, which obviously we've covered throughout the show today. And there is a review of 15 human studies that found that supplementing with Bifidobacterium and Lactobacillus for 1 to 2 months can improve anxiety, depression, autism symptoms, OCD symptoms, and also memory as well. So definitely worth looking into if you struggle with those conditions. Certain probiotic strains can help you to keep your heart healthy. So they help by reducing cholesterol. So some bacterial strains can lower the bad cholesterol, the LDL cholesterol, and they can help to increase the HDL or the good cholesterol. And what the way that works is they help reduce cholesterol by breaking bile down in the gut. So it stops it being reabsorbed, which then in turn can obviously help to reduce your overall cholesterol levels. Probiotics can help reduce the severity of certain allergies and also can help with eczema as well. Again, both are autoimmune conditions. I used to have hay fever years ago, and actually I've taken probiotics for about 5 or 6 years now, and I don't suffer with it at all. Coincidence, perhaps, but I used to get it really bad, and I don't get it at all. So, yeah, there's perhaps some truth in the probiotic to allergies research. It can, as we've mentioned, help with certain digestive disorders. So things like colitis, it can help with that as well. And it can also boost your immune system. So very quickly, if you're looking at probiotics, I would go for capsules. I would take a minimum of 20 billion CFUs, which are colony-forming units. I would buy the best quality you can afford and take them in the morning with a large glass of water. And my view on probiotic yogurts is they often are high in calories, high in sugars, and I personally would avoid them. Right, it's 11:57. I need to wrap the show up. So I'd like to thank Alison and Caroline once more for coming on the show this morning. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
And I'd like to just remind you of the show's Facebook page, which is Health Matters Radio Show, and also the Twitter feed, which is at Health Radio Show. If you'd like to come on the show as a guest, as Caroline and Alison have done this morning, then please make contact with me and we'll have a chat about coming on a future show. And if you'd like to contact me directly, just a reminder, my website is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. After the last song, we will have the Channel Radio News and Weather. I'd like to thank you for listening this morning. And please do tune in same time next Monday, 11 o'clock on the 20th of August. Until then, have a great week. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I will catch you next Monday. And one last song to play you out that I haven't heard for years, actually. It's a great song from the Manic Street Preachers. It's A Design for Life. So until next week, have a great week.